Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's crunch time for the Democratic candidates. The first big round in the 2004 presidential race lands Monday with the Iowa caucuses. The latest polls show a four-way near dead heat between Dean, Gebhardt, Kerry, and Edwards. But with roughly a third of Iowa voters undecided and the exotic vagaries of caucusing, anything could happen. Iowa is Gebhardt's backyard, but Kerry has been surging in the polls. Howard Dean is cutting a wide swath through suburbs and cornfields. And John Edwards has been quietly, effectively hanging in there. The race is well and truly on. Tonight, On Point, we'll talk with Iowa voters about Monday's Iowa caucuses. But before we turn to the voters, I'm first joined from Des Moines, Iowa, by Paul Anger, editor of the Des Moines Register. Good evening and welcome, Paul Anger.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
It's terrific to have you with us. You're just about to head straight into the thick of it out there. We're looking at these polls, and things are really bunched up. What does it look like on the home stretch to Monday, Paul?
Well, it really is a horse race. You talk about politics being a horse race. This is a horse race, and if you want to have the image of the horses coming, just making the final turn and starting down the stretch, four of them abreast. Our political cartoonist, Brian Duffy, actually has a cartoon in tomorrow's paper that sort of gives you that image, and that is very much the image here now. I'm not sure they're all nose-to-nose, they're all within the length of each other. It's going to be pretty interesting.
We're looking at this Zogby poll out today. They've been tracking closely, and, of course, the polls are famously difficult with the Iowa's caucus format. But Kerry's getting 22% here. Howard Dean, 21%. Gebhardt, 21%. John Edwards, 17%, all within the margin of error. That's about as close as it could be among four candidates on the eve of the caucus.
Yeah, it is about as close as it could be, and I think that's probably pretty accurate. And one of the reasons you know that poll is accurate, that it's so tight, is the way the candidates are acting right now. They have, with the exception of Edwards, they have been fairly negative, usually toward attacking each other, usually toward the end of a campaign such as this, when the people get ready to make their decisions, the candidates take the high road.
Right, they start to settle down a little, not this time.
No, they haven't settled down at all. They're still going after each other. They're attacking each other, and that tells you that their own tracking polls tell them that this is a horse race and they need to get the whip out and flog the horse as you head down the stretch.
Right, or maybe flog the other guy's horse.
Exactly.
Paul Anger, what's the dynamic been here in these last few weeks? It was only a short time ago. It didn't look like such a close thing.
Well, it didn't. It didn't look that close. But, you know, at this point in the campaign, it's very fluid. And the caucuses are traditionally a sort of this process where Iowans are really good, truly, about listening to the candidates, about seeing what's going on with them, about looking at the issues, about looking for little stumbles and little things that sort of tend to add up. And they truly, truly don't break early. Iowans will break late. And one of the interesting things about the caucuses, and you sort of alluded to this in your lead-in here, is that people go into those caucuses, and it's not like heading into a voting booth. They head in, they split up into people that are supporting Edwards over here and Kerry over there,
right,
and Dean and so forth, and then they argue with each other, and they try to get people to their side. And it is quite the little democratic process, and there are minds changed on the spot.
People are still ready to deal. Paul Anger, give us a sense, just a thumbnail of how each of these four candidates has been presenting, faring, showing themselves in the home stretch here. John Kerry's had a surge here at the end.
Kerry has had a surge. Kerry has been very aggressive in the debates that we've seen in the debates in Iowa. He has been hammering his message. He has been there's been a frenetic pace now for weeks in Iowa. He has taken that to new levels. He now is flying around in a helicopter around Iowa for the last few days here, and I think that people are noticing that he's doing his best.
How about Howard Dean? How has he shown himself in Iowa?
Well, Howard Dean started as you know, as a front runner. He's been a front runner for quite some time. If you go back far enough, a year and a half ago, nobody knew who he was. Mm-hmm. If you go back 6 months ago, Howard Dean was the hot candidate, and still remains so. But that some of that has sort of gone away as the others have chipped away and chipped away and chipped away. And most of the negativity here has been directed at Howard Dean.
So it's his loss as much as their gain. They've taken it out of Howard Dean's hide.
Well, I think they have to some extent. And Howard acted like a front runner. He has been acting like a frontrunner. That is, he's playing not to lose. Now, when you play not to lose and other people are coming at you, they can start chipping away and chinking away at your armor. And then, of course, Howard has now had a few comments pile up, probably to his detriment over a period of time. And a little bit of that temper has come out.
Is that looking like his major vulnerability, the major chink in his armor at this point?
Oh, I don't know. I think that the believers in Howard Dean are still with him. I think he still has strong support. I think that some of the casual Howard Dean fans, if you can call them that, have been given pause by some of what they see as sort of an angry candidate. Can an angry candidate go the distance and win the caucus, win the nomination, win the election? I think you have to have more than anger to project, and he has projected that against President Bush. He's starting to project it now against the other candidates in fighting back. He's not taking it, these chinks out of his armor, without fighting back, and he is doing that now against the other candidates.
Make or break for Dick Gephardt, it would look like. How's he doing?
Dick Gephardt is not doing well. His poll numbers are about as good, at least going into the caucuses, as anybody's. But that's not really good news for Dick Gephardt. Mm-hmm. Dick Gephardt won the Iowa caucuses in 1988. He needs a victory.
And the man from Missouri, it's right next door. This is his turf.
It's right next door. He's from Missouri. Iowans know him well. A lot of Iowans know him fondly. He's a big union supporter. He needs to win Iowa handily to get any sort of springboard into the rest of this campaign. He's not going to do that.
And what's with John Edwards? He's at 17% here. The other guys have 20 and change, but still he's not far behind. He's within that margin of error. What's he riding?
Well, I think John Edwards has sort of been, to use the horse race analogy, while these other horses have been pounding it out and thundering against each other, this is the quieter horse, the more positive horse, kind of the underdog, sticking with a positive message, trying to rally, talking about his grassroots, talking about his programs, but talking about how I'm going to galvanize America. I'm going to galvanize Democrats. I'm going to do this. He stayed sort of out of that infighting, and his horse has been sort of coming up on the rail, slowly gaining, slowly gaining, slowly gaining. Mm. It'll be interesting to see how he comes out.
Your newspaper, the Des Moines Register, Paul, endorsed John Edwards. What was the rationale that you gave?
Well, we did endorse John Edwards, and it was, frankly, a tough decision for us. If you'd said, asked me, Tom, a couple months ago, well, who are we going to endorse? I don't think John Edwards was going to be the first thing that came to my lips.
And I'm still a bit surprised papers do like to endorse winners if they can, and he's still at the back of this foursome.
Well, he is, but, you know, we've been able to look at all the candidates, how they handle themselves, what their policies are, how they make their points, how they come off, whether they seem like, over a period of time, over a long haul, they can project somebody that you want standing behind the presidential seal or filling up the TV screen when they give an address. In the case of John Edwards, we think he's got talent. We think he's a comer. We think that he's got more to him than his sort of boyish looks. We've been able to listen to his policies. You know, all of these candidates, they have differences, but frankly, in their approaches, and their policy, the policies that they've outlined, you could put them and they could all fit together nicely in a taxi cab. So you have to look, beyond these nuances in tax credits and No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. And they're all pretty close on that and what in the general thrust. So you look at leadership, you look at somebody who could be electable, you look at somebody who is going to play well for the long haul to give the country a good foil against President Bush, somebody who would stand up to President Bush and make a good choice and really be in there. Now, can an angry candidate like Dean do that? Can Kerry do that over a period of time? Very earnest, looks a little stiff maybe on the stump. Gephardt is not a fresh face. So you start looking at all of the candidates, and you look at Edwards, and you look at his background, and you look at how he's done very, very well.
And your newspaper did the math, and that's where you came out. Paul Anger, we're grateful for all the work you do there in Iowa and for all of us around the country in sorting through all of this so early on. We're grateful to you for being with us tonight. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Doing it our best. My pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. Paul Anger, editor of the Des Moines Register. Tonight, we are talking with voters about Monday's Iowa caucuses, about how they intend to vote and why they intend to vote for whomever they've chosen. What's your question for these voters who have seen a lot of the Democratic contenders and are now ready to decide? What's your question for the folks who will cast the first big votes of the 2004 presidential election? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Ames, Iowa, for our own little Iowa caucus tonight is Chris Godfrey. He's an attorney and a caucus precinct captain for John Edwards. Good evening and welcome, Chris Godfrey.
Thank you. My pleasure being here.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Chris. And also with us from Ames, Iowa, is Becky Olson, a management analyst for the Woodward Resource Center. It's a residential facility for people with developmental disabilities. She is a caucus precinct captain for Howard Dean. Becky Olson, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
I guess, Becky, how does it look to you? You're solid for Howard Dean, obviously. You're a precinct captain. Do you know where you're meeting? Obviously, you do. Where are you meeting Monday night? What's the scene going to be there?
Well, actually, the scene is a small church in a small community, and we have about 300 people that are supposed to show up. So I'm not sure how we're all going to fit in that small church, but it's going to be pretty exciting.
When did you decide for Dean, Becky? How early on?
March 25th.
You know the day. It was
absolutely
a road to Damascus experience.
I had lunch with him that day.
Oh, well, that's a payoff of being an Iowan.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Where did you have lunch and what did you hear?
Well, actually, a very, very good professional friend of mine, someone I look up to a lot, had called me a couple weeks prior, said, I'm quitting my job at the University of Iowa after 14 years and I'm going to work for Howard Dean.
Gosh,
and
I said,
who? And then he said, well, will you think about, learn about Howard Dean? I said, sure. He said, well, Howard's going to be at the Iowa Parent and Training Information Center on the 25th, we're having lunch. How about you join us? So I did.
And what impressed you over that lunch, Becky?
Well, just that he's a real person and that he sat there and all of us there work with persons with disabilities. And he said, I don't know a lot about disability issues. Fill me in. And he listened and he asked questions and we talked and he was just, he ate a sandwich, he's a real guy.
And he got you right there. You're
oh,
on the hook
absolutely.
And you stayed on.
Absolutely.
Chris Godfrey, how about you and John Edwards? Why, when, where did you, how did you decide?
I first met Senator Edwards at a convention of lawyers here in Des Moines. It was kind of a surreal experience. He came to give a presentation at a seminar. It was just a couple days before the general election back in 2000, and we all know what happened in that election. But
right.
At that time, Senator Edwards was talking about the importance of voting. And when he entered the room, he came in from the back, and it's something you just kind of have to picture. There was probably 300 to 400 people in the room, all focused at the front of the room, and this person enters from the back, and the charisma of this gentleman made everybody just kind of turn around and see who was there. He has such a presence. When he got up to the podium to speak, he ended up getting several standing ovations. And this was at a time when Al Gore was coming through Des Moines because Iowa was one of the key battleground states
right.
in the 2000 election. And, we had all been involved. We had seen Al Gore here to campaign. We had heard him speak. And here was this person who had come kind of out of nowhere from North Carolina.
And just lighting up the room.
And just enlightening everybody in the room and getting several standing ovations. And, you know, earlier that week we had seen the vice president. And, you know, we kind of knew the stump speech, but
it wasn't impressed. The same thing. And 4 years later, you're still there with your eye on John Edwards. The Iowa caucus is coming on Monday. Chris Godfrey, Becky Olson, stand by. We're going to be joined by some more Iowa voters in just a moment. Listeners, you can join us. What's your question for the folks in Iowa? They're about to make a very big vote. We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are holding our own little Iowa caucus tonight, almost on the eve of Monday's caucuses in Iowa, when 1,993 precincts will hold their meetings in churches and schools and living rooms right across that state. And out of that, we will have the first official kind of ranking after the little District of Columbia vote as to what's going on in this big, crowded, so far, Democratic race for the nomination. We're talking with Iowa voters about Monday's caucuses and how they intend to vote and why they intend to vote that way. We've been joined by Chris Godfrey in Ames and Becky Olson. Chris looking for an Edwards victory. Becky Olson solid with Howard Dean. You can join our conversation as well. What's your question for the folks in Iowa? What's your question for the people who will cast the first big votes of the 2004 presidential campaign? Are you following the logic, the instincts, the leanings of these Iowans? Chris and Becky, we are joined now from Des Moines by Chuck Gifford. He's a Gephardt supporter. Good evening. Welcome, Chuck Gifford.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're real well, Chuck, and thanks a lot for joining us. Let's see.
You're at the epicenter of participatory democracy tonight.
We feel it, and we see it,
coming. If Grant Woods was alive, he would do well by painting a portrait of this.
Well, I don't know if you're holding a pitchfork or a calculator out there, Chuck Gifford. We're told everywhere.
I'm not a pitchfork guy, and I leave it up to others to use the calculators.
We understand, Chuck, you first caucused in 1968 for Hubert Humphrey. You're
right.
70 or so now, retired. You worked for the United Auto Workers. You were a union political action guy there. So Gephardt, I guess it makes sense that he would be your man. Is this the solid union embrace that you're giving the man from Missouri?
Oh, yes, and it goes beyond the labor movement, Tom. I felt for some time that this campaign, particularly this year, in view of what President Bush has done for this country, and particularly with our foreign policy, this election has got to be about trust and who you can trust. And I'm hopeful that Iowans will go to their caucus Monday night reflective on not so much the charm factor, not so much who's going to win the beauty contest or the flavor of the week or flavor of the day, but who they want to run this country and who they can trust to do that.
Chuck Gifford, did you look at the other candidates, or were you solid from Gephardt from the start?
Oh, I've been a political activist all my life, Tom, certainly. I must say that I don't hold any of these candidates at a distance. I think I have probably a bigger problem with Governor Dean than I do any of the rest of them. I admire John Kerry's record. He looks a hell of a lot better in an Air Force jacket than George Bush does. and I like John Edwards. He's a young, dynamic young man.
And Howard Dean, what's your problem? What's your problem there, Chuck?
Frankly, to see him leave the Senate, so yep. He's needed there.
What's your problem with Howard Dean, Chuck Gifford?
Well, I don't know. I've debated with myself over this. I think it goes back to the trust factor. He's been so ambivalent about a lot of stuff. If someone does. Paul Anger says that everybody's on attack on him. I don't think comparative analysis of these candidates and their votes and their issues and their policy makes them any kind of an attack dog. But Dean does hold this anger deeply, and it's I don't think it has any business. I think we can have differences and disagree, but when people get red in the face and get stiff and get hostile and angry, it seems like it's all right for Dean to go on the attack and attack people as Washington insiders, but he's he certainly has, welcomes Tom Harkin's endorsement,
mm-hmm.
35 incumbent congressman's endorsement, and then runs as an outsider. And I just think that's the height of hypocrisy.
Well, he's got a lot of support, though, but I hear a real Iowan...
Oh, no question about that.
I hear a real Iowan strain in your observation there. Chuck, I want to welcome into the conversation from Iowa City, Mark Barrett. He is going to stand up for John Kerry on Monday night. Good evening and welcome, Mark Barrett.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What's got you in the Kerry camp, Mark?
I feel a little embarrassed because I'm not sort of involved with the personalities as much.
That's all right. Something hooked you, though. What was it?
Yeah, well, I felt after the war started that it was one of those elections where you have to get off the sidelines. And I've never really been involved in politics before, but I thought, okay, who do we have to run ourselves to compete with effectively a war president? And I started looking through the candidates, and it's almost a sort of negative test. Who's going to be the toughest to knock off their game on defense or, excuse me, national security?
So if national security is the issue, you want somebody who can go toe-to-toe with George Bush and say, I'm pulling rank on you here, and you see that in John Kerry, the Vietnam War veteran.
Yeah, I mean, it seems obvious to me after 9/11 was used, I think, quite egregiously in service of promoting the war in Iraq, that the people we'll be competing against will do everything they can to portray Democrats as soft on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a given. And if we don't have a candidate who can stand up to that, we just leave ourselves wide open for that. And that's... So in terms of policy issues, in terms of the coming election, that's how I ended up giving Kerry a good look.
Mark, there you are. You're 42, a freelance writer, father of two. Mm-hmm. When you look around, the polls are looking good right here in the final days for John Kerry. Are you feeling a late surge for the senator?
I think my feeling is that voters, I feel very good about this as an Iowan, that we are... There was a lot of talk about, you know, this election is really important and we've got to make a smart pick. We've got to find somebody who can beat this guy. But you never know if that's lip service or not.
Mm-hmm.
And what's making me feel real good about the process right now is that people really are taking an incredibly hard look. I think Paul Anger talked about that before.
Looking at who can actually win? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. They are looking past the pretty pictures, they're looking past the sound bites, they're looking past, you know, even the back and forth, whether it's a negative attack or just differences of opinion, they are looking past the nomination to the election. And that's really all I wanted.
And you
give Kerry a chance.
And you see it in John Kerry. Becky Olson, let me come to you on two fronts. Mark Barrett says what he wants ultimately is someone who can win against George Bush. And for that, he sees in John Kerry's military background and record a winning combination. Chuck Gifford looks at your man, Howard Dean, and says he's a bit too red in the face for him. How do you respond as a Deaniac to those observations?
Well, in regards to the angry and being red in the face, you know, I have spent time with the man. I've met him several times. I've gone to the debates. I've gone to the rallies. You know, and it's like we have every right to be angry at President Bush and what's going on, but that's not how I leave the get-togethers. I leave with a feeling of hope, and I feel excited, and I feel passionate about our country again, and I feel like when I'm surrounded by all these young voters and how he's bringing people out of the woodwork who have never voted before. He's talking to the youth, and there are all kinds of youth there. 18, 17.
Is that very evident at the dean meetings in Iowa?
Oh my gosh, it's remarkable. I marched in a Labor Day parade for Howard Dean, and there was probably 200 people that marched with us, and I swear 60% were teens.
Wow.
It was amazing, just amazing. And I don't see that's anger. I don't see that teens and youth and 25 years and below are going to come out of the woodwork and say, I want to vote because they're angry. It's because they feel good and they feel empowered and they feel like Howard Dean values them and that we have a place in America again. And I think that's what Howard Dean is trying to say, is help us feel like Democrats again.
And what about this national security issue? If it's, you know, if it's national security stupid this year, if that's what it turns out to be, mm-hmm. can a former Vermont governor take on a wartime president and win?
Well, I don't think that people are as happy with President Bush as everybody thinks, you know, so I don't see that it's impossible to beat the man. I think that he's made a lot of bad mistakes in regards to foreign policy. And again, with Governor Dean, you know, when I listen to him speak and he talks about how he wants to change the world's perception of us and so that people like us again and want to work with us again, that's the way. That's the way you build security, is by lessening the number of enemies you have out there. And also with him talking about funding and funding security. And I know darn well that President Bush, you know, when every time we go to the level orange, he hasn't sent the money to the state of Iowa for us to have that security at level orange.
For the local police, the local fire. You've been listening at those Dean rallies, Becky. I can hear that. Chris Godfrey, what about with John Edwards? You know the rap on him nationally. He's got that nice charisma, but he's just too pretty a face and doesn't seem to carry the gravitas, the weight. Can he be a winner against George Bush?
Oh, I definitely think so. He's a lot more substance than he is over style. I hear a lot of people talking about the anger factor, the charisma factor. He's got the plans in place to lead this country. And Chuck is someone that from Des Moines, is someone that I've respected for quite a long time. And he says that this election is about trust. And he believes that Dick mm-hmm. Gephardt is the person to trust. But I think this election is about who we can not only trust, but who can win. And John Edwards is a person that has won in the southern state. He has gone up against an entrenched Republican, Launch Faircloth, who had tremendous amounts of more money than he did in a very Republican conservative state, and he beat the man. We need someone who can lead as John Edwards has led in North Carolina and in the Senate for everyday people. And the reason that he's won is because he has substance and he also has style. And it's a person that has a large amount of trust from many, many people, and I think that's why he's got the momentum at this point in time.
And we've heard that again and again, a little bit behind in the polls, but yet he's right up there. Chris, Becky, Chuck, Mark, I'm so glad you're with us tonight. We have callers who want to join this conversation. I want to turn to them. Kelly's calling from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi, Kelly. You're on the air.
Hi. I am calling because I know about the caucus that's going on Monday. Everyone knows about that. And I understand people are going to be standing in a room and moving around for who they support.
Right.
But how do they determine who's the winner if it's going to be held in basement of churches and in little meeting halls? Do they have, like, it all hooked up to the Internet that everyone in the room, whoever has the most people standing in their corner, is the winner, and then that's automatically sent to the caucus headquarters?
Right.
I'm just curious how it works.
It's a great question, because we all have this image of people milling around in a church basement, but I'm not sure anybody outside Iowa knows exactly how it actually works. Kelly, thanks for that call. Maybe to answer that, let me bring in one more voter from Iowa. Jan Olson joins us from Sioux City, Iowa. She's 57-year-old precinct chair, also in the Edwards campaign. She's a high school guidance counselor. She will take her 7-year-old grandson to the caucus on Monday night. Good evening and welcome, Jan Olson.
Hi, I'm glad to be with you.
It's great to have you, Jan. I understand that you've been attending caucuses for a long time.
Yes, I have.
It's a multi-generational thing in your family.
Absolutely.
And what's your grandson's name who will be there with you, your 7-year-old grandson, on Monday?
Brooks.
Okay, so he's going to be along for a little early education. Can you fill us in on exactly how this works, Jan, because it is confusing from outside. What's the process? What's the system that determines who wins what in the Iowa caucuses?
Well, basically, it's a process, and each political party does it differently, and so I'll speak to how the Democratic Party mm-hmm. Determines who the winners are and the viability of candidates and so on. What happens when you get to the caucus, there is a temporary chair, and it's usually the precinct chair that serves on the county committee, and then a permanent chair is chosen. And it's determined before you go to the caucus how many delegates you'll be electing to the county convention. And actually what you're doing is electing delegates to the county convention.
Which is going on that same evening or later?
No, the county convention is held in March.
Okay.
Okay. And so basically what happens is, like, for example, if your particular precinct has 13 delegates, then there's a formula you put through this, and based upon the number of caucus attendees.
Okay.
And then you would determine how many people you need to have standing for a candidate for that candidate to be viable.
And viable means that some percentage of that local vote is going to be sent up to the next level for them.
Right, exactly.
So 15% minimum support in the room, or they don't even show up. They're invisible.
Right. Well, they are at that particular time.
Right.
But then what happens is there. Let's say that you have you have two candidates that aren't viable.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can go ahead and you can begin to speak and convince folks. And maybe you have a group of undecideds. And the undecideds then decide to join another group, and that one more group becomes viable.
So this is very dynamic. I mean, this is within the room on this
right.
evening, presumably. If there aren't enough in whatever person's corner, you can say, look, guys, it's not going to work for you. Come to my corner. Come to this corner.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And it really is incredibly exciting. And also you have to remember that you can, if a group is viable of undecided, you can elect an undecided. And you can go to the county convention as an undecided, unclaimed delegate also.
As long as the undecided group is more than 15%.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
So on that night, you're going to be sending up numbers, but there's a lot of dickering that goes on to determine exactly what gets sent up, and there's strategy in that dickering. Chuck Gifford, you've seen this happen over many years as well. What kind of horse trading goes on in these caucus rooms as the evening proceeds?
Well, primarily it's... to borrow your expression, dickering, what you're doing here is bargaining for delegates. And one has to keep in mind in 1976, now, Tom, I'll bet your perception is that Jimmy Carter won the Iowa caucus. He didn't. The undecided came in first in 1976 here.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing
Carter.
If you look back, Jimmy Carter came in second place to the undecided. George McGovern, the eventual
right.
nominee in 72, came in third place.
That's right.
And winners, there have been plenty of winners, including Dick Gephardt and Tom Harkin in 92, who won the caucus but didn't win the nomination.
But to get to the core part of your question is that if, let's just use some names that will be there.
All right.
Dennis Kucinich.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my precinct, I don't know about Chris's or Jan's or what's going to happen in their precinct. Dennis Kucinich will not be viable in Precinct 87 in Des Moines, Iowa.
Okay.
Now, he may very well have, and let's just hypothetically say 10%.
Yep.
There'll be leadership. That'll be self-evident. Somebody will be a spokesperson for that Kucinich group. And what you do is appeal to those spokespersons about getting themselves elected. And since I'm a Gephardt
right.
Attendee, I'm going to tell them, if you'll come over to Gephardt and add to our numbers
mm-hmm.
to improve our strength, then we will elect a proportionate share of your group as Gephardt delegates. Now, when Jan's right. When you get to the county convention, you're again a free agent. You can then go back to the Kucinich group at the county convention.
So they can live to fight again that way.
I think most people, mm-hmm. Tom, that are going to go to these caucuses are going to be pretty well worn out about policy and about issues. This is going to be about second choices. And about who's going to be delegates to the county convention, and how that's going to get parlayed.
Jan Olson, let me just ask you real quickly. Excuse me, Jan, are you confident that in your precinct, John Edwards is going to get that 15%? Do you know already?
Oh, absolutely. I've done my homework.
So you're ready for the night, and are you ready to woo over the Kucinich people, the Joe Lieberman, the Wesley Clark people that night?
I'm prepared to let the process work.
Jan, it's great to have you with us tonight, and good luck to your grandson on his first caucus on Monday night, Brooks.
The other thing I'd like to say is I just would like to say that Iowans are really serious about this, and they really want to encourage young people to get involved.
Jan, we hear it loud and clear. We've got to take a break, and I know I have to let you go, but thanks for joining us from Sioux City. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. 3 days before the real caucus, we're holding our own little Iowa caucus tonight with Iowa voters about Monday's Iowa caucuses, about how they intend to vote and why. My guests tonight from across Iowa, Chris Godfrey and Becky Olson in Ames, Iowa. Chris, an Edwards man. Becky Olson, a Dean woman. Chuck Gifford is with us from Des Moines. He's a 70-year-old retired UAW worker, and he's solid for Dick Gephardt. And Mark Barrett joins us from Iowa City. He is there for John Kerry. Says he's the guy who can carry the national security torch against George Bush. Everybody's saying tonight what they really want is a winner. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you think? What are your questions for the folks in Iowa? And are you following the logic, the instincts, the leanings of these Iowans? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack's calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Okay. Thanks for letting me on.
Sure,
I'm very impressed with the caliber of people from all the different camps as I listen to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope
they're really paying
that,
attention out there, aren't they?
Well, trying. And I hope that when this is over, they get together and get behind whoever emerges at the convention.
Well, that's
all that good intelligence and energy, because Bush is the real problem.
Jack, are you saying that because you fear that the Democrats have been splintered in all the debates and the run-up to the primaries here, or just because you want unity in the face of the incumbent?
Well, I just a little history that it was Al Gore who discovered Willie Horton back in 1988, used it against Dukakis in the New York primary, and I think that was, of course, picked up by the Republicans. So I think we have to be careful now as Democrats to not present a mortally wounded candidate, whoever that might be.
So to rally around once the choice is made. Jack, thanks very much for your call and your compliments to our Iowa guest tonight. Chris Godfrey, let me put that to you. I guess, first of all, what's your sense of the overall gang of contenders this year? Are you generally impressed? And once the chips fall where they will in Iowa and on through the slalom ride of New Hampshire and South Carolina and the rest, do you feel confident that Iowa Democrats are going to be able to rally effectively around one candidate?
Wherever the chips fall, the Democrats will fall in line. George Bush has been a failure as a president. As Dick Gephardt has said, he's been a miserable failure. John Edwards has run a very, very positive campaign, and that's one of the things that I think is giving him the momentum at this point in time, is that people think that he is the positive person, and he's not ganging up on anybody else. But regardless of who wins this nomination, whether it's John Edwards, Howard Dean, Dick Gephardt, the Democrats will fall in line because they know that George Bush is the reason that they're all running. I think it would be better if everybody had the same type of positive vision that John Edwards has shown in the last debate, especially at the Black and Brown Forum in Des Moines. The candidates, especially Dick Gephardt, I thought went almost over the line in terms of his criticism of Howard Dean. And to be quite honest, as a person who stood up for Bill Clinton for 8 years, seeing him get pounded daily by the right-wing media that we have in this country, it almost made me a Dean supporter to see Dick Gephardt trouncing him the way that he was in the Black and Brown Forum. And, the main thing that we've got to focus on is staying positive, because the caller's right. George Bush is the reason for this election. We've got to get him out.
Chuck Gifford, there's a bit of a charge against your man Gephardt. Did he have the brass knuckles on too heavy at the Black and Brown Forum? And tell us what that is.
Well, I tell you, quite frankly, I don't think so. And to lay any fears of the gentleman from Massachusetts that called in. My experience with Democrats in Iowa is that we'll come together. I seen it in 76. We had a field of a number of candidates in 76 when Jimmy Carter was pronounced the winner out here. The Gore-Bradley race here in 2000 was not a cakewalk.
Mm-hmm.
Gore carried this state.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, Democrats take this very seriously out here. They have a lot of fun at it. I think sometimes we get our egos get in the way because of all of the national press. But the fact of the matter is, we'll come home after this. We've got plenty of time to do that. To your question, I got to say, I think Howard Dean started this by running against Washington. Being a minority leader, a majority leader in that Congress is not a simple job.
That's for sure.
Any Iowan knows that we're dealing with a lot of southern states and a lot of southern congressmen here who often act like Republicans and not like Democrats. And when anybody accuses an incumbent Democratic congressman, which incidentally could be our own Senator Tom Harkin, mm-hmm. I'm taken back by the fact that the Dean people are excited about the Harkin endorsement. But Harkin is one of those Washington insiders and has been since 1972, and I dearly love my senator.
Right.
But it's just an unfair criticism to say that you've got to set and take this criticism, whether it's the resolution on Iraq. I got a mailing today from the Dean campaign that Gephardt had not delivered prescription drugs, had not delivered on health care. The list goes on and on. I don't know how any of these candidates, I've seen Kerry take the brunt of this. I've seen Edwards, quite frankly, take the brunt of this. And I get offended by that. We can have a contest here, and it can and the debate it ought to be centered around public policy and who you can trust.
But we can hear that there's been some blows landed, some bruises here.
Tom, my idea goes beyond just the now. I want to know who's going to be the vice president. I'd love to see a Gephardt Edwards ticket in this country. I think we would do well with that.
Let's take another call. Jesse is calling from Milford, Massachusetts. Hi, Jesse. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just want to express my perception, which may be a little cynical, but I mean, I think because in this highly polarized political atmosphere that we're in now, I think, you know, Republicans are going to vote Republican, Democrats are going to vote Democrat, and the people that are going to swing the election are, you know, the undecideds. And to be undecided at this point, you know, with the radical Bush administration, I think that those people aren't really going to vote based on policy, because if they are, then their decision is already pretty clear.
So what's it going to be, Jesse?
People that would vote kind of with their gut and on who fits the role more, which personally I think Gephardt would be the best choice as far as policy goes and experience, et cetera. But I don't think he fits the role. I think he's more like Gore, where he says all the right things, but he's boring. He doesn't inspire people.
So who gets your gut, Jesse?
I think Dean is going to take it, even though he wouldn't be my first choice based on policy and experience. But I think that
just because he's got that fire. Let me put that to Becky Olson. And Becky, I guess there's the question of that kind of hot charisma that Dean has for many people. But also, has he been wounded in the debates out there in the crossfire in Iowa?
Absolutely. He's, you know, it's I have a lot I would like to say in response to some of Chuck's comments. But first of all, I do think that as I've been watching all the debates and listening on the radio, Governor Dean was very positive, and he stayed positive even when the other candidates started, when Howard was way ahead, then the other candidates started to slam on him, and I really think that eventually he has worn down a bit, and even though I still see him trying very hard to stay positive, and he still does stay positive. Just a couple weeks ago during a debate, he said, you know, it doesn't matter who wins as long as we can beat George Bush. And he said, if I'm not the front runner, I'm behind every single one of you, whoever that front runner may be, and I would expect that you would all feel the same way. And nobody else at that debate said a word.
Well, he did ask for a show of hands in a way that they could hardly, an offer they couldn't refuse, and everybody put their hand up saying they'd agree, at least the debate I saw televised where he asked that. But it may be easy for a frontrunner like he was to ask.
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, yeah, I understand that.
Not as easy for the others. Mark Barrett, I don't know what it's going to look like at the precinct meeting that you go to on Monday night. Maybe Kerry will sweep it there, and maybe he's on his way to victory. But let me just ask you out of curiosity, if he doesn't, if Kerry should, in your particular precinct, despite what he's showing in the polls, if he should come in low, if you need to make a second choice, have you thought about where you'd turn?
Yeah, I have.
Are you willing to reveal it to us tonight?
Well, I am, but there's a little bit of a conflict here, because I think the caller's point a moment ago was right, that we have to think about the concerns of swing voters. And I think one of their primary concerns will be national security, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when I took a look at candidates, Kerry and Bob Graham were really the only two I thought that would sell on that point.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Graham dropped out. Clark came in late after I decided, and he was so late here that he couldn't put together a campaign.
Hasn't even run there.
No, so he's not running. So I could name a second choice, but the problem is it kind of falls off the table of what I think we're trying to do here.
So your second choice is running hard in New Hampshire tonight, but not in Iowa.
Probably, yeah. And so that makes it a little difficult. You know, we really have to be aware not just of the internal party politics, which you're sort of getting a taste of that tonight. You know, mm-hmm. there's real passion here.
Sure is.
But Bill Clinton spoke at the Harkin steak fry. It was the first time I'd ever seen Clinton speak. And, you know, he told people, go ahead, fall in love. But when we decide this thing, we have to fall in line like the Republicans. I'm confident we'll do that. And I think that the cooling off period here after we decide and things move on, that'll help Iowans get comfortable with whoever the eventual nominee is.
Fall in love, but then fall in line. That Bill Clinton always had a way with words. Boy, our time has been too short tonight. It's been just terrific talking with all of you. I'm sure we and the rest of the country will be watching very closely on Monday night. Mark Barrett, the Kerry man, Chuck Gifford for Gebhardt, Chris Godfrey for Edwards, and Becky Olson for Howard Dean. Thanks to each of you for being with us tonight. It's a real insight, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Yank. You've done a good job.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Tom.
Just terrific talking with you. Good luck in all your caucuses on Monday night. Listeners, you can listen to our interviews with all 8 of the remaining Democratic presidential contenders on our website. Go to onpointradio.org. In a moment, Carol Moseley Braun withdraws from the presidential race. This is On Point. Saying that her campaign had offered Americans a unique opportunity for progress, former Senator Carol Moseley Braun withdrew from the 2004 presidential race today and endorsed Howard Dean. Braun's departure comes just 4 days before the Iowa caucuses and leaves 8 candidates, all men, remaining on the Democratic side. Braun's campaign had failed to gain much support, either financially or in the polls. The funding and organizational disadvantages of a non-traditional campaign could not, in the end, be overcome, she said in today's announcement in Carroll, Iowa. Here's an excerpt from that speech.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, and I quote, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Progress for our republic will come when we live up to the ideal of equality and inclusion that is at the heart of the American dream. The political process is an avenue for building a more perfect union, if for no other reason than it is, in the end, a purely mathematical process. With one vote more than the next guy, you win, at least most of the time." When women run for office, when people of color run, we open up the possibility that women and people of color can win. I have a record of building bridges, bringing people together, and breaking barriers, and I am proud of my role in breaking new ground with this campaign. I was able to walk in the footsteps of my hero, former Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm, and we qualified for ballot position in more states than any woman has ever done in the history of this country. So to those of you who believed in this effort, I say take heart. You can claim the nobility of moving our country forward and of opening up possibilities for all our daughters. I thank you for your vision and your patriotism. But today especially, I ask that you share my view that Governor Dean is the candidate best equipped to continue the progress we need to have, to bring Americans together, to renew our country and restore our privacy, our liberty, and our economic security. His leadership will help us live up to our generational responsibility. And so I am happy to support him and hope that you will stand for him with the conviction and courage with which you would have stood for me. I appreciate your continued support, and I look forward to dancing with you at the inaugural ball for Howard Dean this time next year. Thank you so much.
Former Senator Carol Moseley Braun, withdrawing her candidacy for president earlier today, Braun is asking her supporters to back Howard Dean in the upcoming caucuses and primaries. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.